What's up, everyone? Welcome back. Episode 28 of Breaking the Plane. Back at it again. I'm Burge, your host, here with my lovely nemesis, Hogan, my co-host, and a special guest returning again. Wants to continue to talk football with us, Manish Mehta. Manish, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing post-draft?
I'm doing fantastic, other than, you know, the pre-recording health issues that I told you about with my lovely cold that I got going on here, among other things. But yeah, I'm doing great. It's kind of a bummer that the draft is over a little bit. There's so much anticipation going up to it. I'm a little bummed out now that we're kind of entering the dead time of the offseason for the next couple of months until training camp starts to ramp up at the end of July. But all in all, very happy with the draft. Hogan, how you doing today, man?
I'm good. I'm in general. I went to a concert last night, didn't get home till 1 a.m. and had the day off from work. So that was awesome. The fact that I still have a voice is a small miracle, but yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. Then, and in regards to the draft, yeah, I mean, I got to admit, I was a little on the May pick just because it was such an expectation at that point. And of course, everybody and their mother wants to know what we think of drafting May. And it's like, I'd love to tell you, but we won't know until we see the kid play. That's the biggest thing. It's, you hear all the things with the footwork. I mean, honestly, hearing Belichick on the McAfee podcast thing was great to see his perspective as an outsider looking in for the first time. But he does bring up a lot of valid points in terms of whether his footwork is going to improve over time, you know, how he's going to mesh with an actual pro offense with the guys he was playing with compared to now. It's a giant question mark. You got to be excited about it, but at the same time, we all got excited about Mac Jones too, and we all know how that turned out. So it's I got to wait and see what happens until I really, really get excited. But you never know what could happen.
Absolutely. And, you know, we were live streaming on draft night. We saw the unprecedented run on quarterbacks in the first round, coupled with our shock with one of them. But let's go over to you, Manish. I want to get your thoughts on what you think and why there was an unprecedented run on quarterbacks high in this draft. It's, I think, 6 taken in the first 12 picks. It's the most ever at the top of a first round. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, like you guys and like most people, I was really shocked by just how soon. And that just speaks to the dearth of quality quarterbacks in the league and how desperate some teams are. Obviously, all 6 of these quarterbacks, if you're a betting man, will not pan out. I think there's a pretty solid chance that more than half of them won't work out. You know, how good the other 2 or 3 become, it really is dependent on each individual organization. You know, Hogan, you talked about how you guys were excited about Mac Jones and how it didn't turn out. You know, I've seen it on different teams where you have a talented young quarterback, just for guys that I've covered in my career, Mark Sanchez, Sam Darnold, guys who had a lot of ability coming out of college, but they just didn't have that talent cultivated the right way. And that's why, you know, I think Ben McAdoo, Alex Van Pelt, I mean, both of those guys specifically are going to be so critical to Drake May's evolution, his growth. I mean, look, I'm not saying those 2 guys can turn him into an all-pro quarterback. What I am definitely saying is that those 2 guys could hinder his ceiling. And I think you saw that with the Jets and Sam Darnold. I'm not saying that Darnold, you know, was going to be an all-time great, but he clearly had a lot of ability and he flashed a lot of that ability toward the end of his rookie season. Then he had a head coaching change and the coaches just couldn't get the most out of him because I don't think that, frankly, he was taught properly. And that goes back to what you said earlier also about Belichick and the footwork. And you know, can he develop that? Can he, you know, process at an NFL caliber level at this position? And that's where Ben McAdoo and Van Pelt really comes into play. Those guys are so critical. I know we want to look at the player and the arm strength and all of that does matter. Yes. But, you know, the teachers, the guys who are teaching these young quarterbacks, whether it is Drake May or J.J. McCarthy or Bo Nix, those guys are equally pivotal. And that's why, even though I think from a talent perspective, J.J. McCarthy and Bo Nix probably, you know, are at the bottom of that group of 6. I think those guys have the best teachers, at least the best proven teachers with know, Sean Payton in Denver with Bo Nix, and Kevin O'Connell, who you know, who I've known for a very long time, who I think is an exceptional mentor for not only a rookie quarterback, but for even a more established veteran. And if you talk to Kirk Cousins, he would tell you that as well. So, you know, I don't know what's going to become of this group. Hopefully it's better than that last group we saw with, you know, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, you know, that group. But I do think that there's talent in this group. It's just a matter of whether they're in the right situation. And by that, I really mean the right teachers.
Absolutely. And I'm not sure what you think about the Penix pick. I want to get your thoughts on that, because while we were live streaming, Hogan, they showed Penix on the camera, and I was like, that's Penix. And Hogan kind of went off saying, they didn't just pick him, did they? I'm like, no, they just showed him. And then five minutes later, not even, he gets picked, and Hogan can't believe it. So I want to get you to think about that. It kind of stunned me, right? Right, Hogan? Stunned me.
Well, that was it, is because we had it, so we were live streaming, and then we had the ESPN broadcast on our second monitors, and mine was about 20 seconds delayed compared to Burge. So I just told him, you know, read me the picks when they come up, so that way it's like natural, not waiting 20 seconds plus. And then, like I said, you saw the clip and you retweeted it, which thank you for that, because I'm sure people got a kick out of it, where it was just like when he saw Penix, I'm sitting there going, no way, they just took him. And then he's like, no, they just showed him. I'm like, that's great. And then when he actually told me, I was just like, get the fuck out of here. Like, no way they just did that. Because we're also, I mean, I remember talking to you specifically being like, he wasn't even judged as a first round talent initially. And then we were talking pre-recording where you said, like, you know, there were a couple of teams that might have grabbed him later in like the teens, but to go eighth overall to a team like Atlanta that was a quarterback away, it seems, and got Cousins for the deal they did, and then to make this move to not better the team right now is mind-boggling to me. I got to get your thoughts on that, Manish. Like, what do you think about that?
Well, first of all, I did see the clip, and I thought it was hilarious, because your initial reaction was, "Oh no, there must be they're talking about something else. It's not Atlanta." But yeah, that was funny. I just don't see the logic behind it. You know, if they didn't have Cousins in the fold, or if they signed a marginal veteran guy like Gardner Minshew, or if they even brought in Russell Wilson, who they'd obviously be paying very little to, I could understand the Penix pick. But the fact that they gave Cousins, it was a 4-year, $180 million deal. Essentially, it was $90 million guaranteed at signing. So, you know, to translate that means that he's going to be on the team for at least 2 years. So you get $45 million a year out of him. So he's not going anywhere for 2024 and 2025. And I did look at the structure of his contract. Theoretically, they could part ways with Cousins after the first 2 years. They'd have to absorb about a $35 million dead cap hit, which sounds like a lot, but you've seen teams do that. You know, most recently you're seeing Denver doing that with Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. So they in theory could do that after the 2025 season. It's much more palatable if they kept Cousins for 3 years, cut him after 2026, and then they'd have about a $12-13 million dead cap hit, which is, you know, marginal. But the bottom line is that they believed enough in Kirk Cousins at age 36, coming off the Achilles, to give him the $90 million guaranteed at signing. It's $100 million fully guaranteed, but at signing it's $90 million, which is a big chunk of change. And then to draft a quarterback who, let's face it, even if he's not ready to play this year, you certainly want him in the mix to be your starting quarterback for 2025. And barring injury to Kirk Cousins, that's not going to happen for Penix. And Penix is I think he's going to turn 24 next week, or maybe 25 next week. He's a much older rookie than even if he were going to start this year. So let's say 2-3 years down the road, when Kirk Cousins is done playing, or they move on from Kirk Cousins, Michael Penix Jr. is going to be playing his first full season as a starter in this scenario at the age of like 27, which is really, it reminds me of that the guy from Florida State to Carolina drafted, Chris Wanky, who was an older – yeah, he was an older rookie. But even then, I mean, when he was playing, he was still younger than 27, which realistically, again, barring injury to Kirk Cousins, Penix isn't going to be a full-time starter until about that age range. So I don't really understand it. I don't understand not addressing defense when they clearly need to upgrade on defense. They spent all this draft capital in the top 10 on these offensive skill position players who've got a lot of ability. And 2 months ago in free agency, when they signed Cousins, we finally said, you know, Kyle Pitts can realize his potential. Drake London can realize his potential. Bijan Robinson will be, much more effective with a quote unquote real quarterback. So you had that. You didn't need to double down with a quarterback when you had so many other needs, I think, on defense. So, it's a head scratcher for Terry Fontenot. I don't really understand it. I don't know why Raheem Morris would even sign off on that, being a defensive guy and knowing that they need some defensive pieces. So, yeah, I mean, I think, if you polled 100 people, random people on the street who are NFL fans, that would be the biggest surprise, certainly in the first round. There was another big surprise in my estimation late in the first round when the Niners took Ricky Pearsall, who's a Florida wide receiver, which, raises your antenna to ask, well, what's going to happen to Deebo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk? Because if you're drafting a wide receiver in round one, he's going to play, and he's probably going to play a lot. So I don't know what the future holds for Ayuk, who's looking for a new contract, or Deebo. I would tend to think Ayuk would be the guy that would be expendable, but I just thought that was an interesting choice by Kyle Shanahan as well, because all three of those guys are not going to play 75% of the snaps.
Absolutely. Did you see the clip of Terry Fontenot and Arthur Blank? Like, it looked like he was explaining his justification for this pick, and it was kind of like Arthur Blank's kind of like, WTF, man. Like, what are we doing here?
Well, Berg, what I will say about that is that I would be stunned if Arthur Blank didn't know that they were going to draft Penix. There's no context to that conversation. I know it makes for good like social media fodder, but I'm pretty sure that Arthur Blank was in the loop and he signed off on it. Another element of the Falcons draft, which came to light in the last 24 hours or so, is that they were trying to trade with the Jets after they took Penix. So they took Penix at 8. They were trying to also get the number 10 pick, and that was revealed in a in-house video on the Jets website, in which the Jets GM was saying, yeah, they're staying at 8. They don't want to trade down. The Jets were looking to move up for Rome Odunze, who, they got sniped by the Bears at 9. But there's video of the Jets GM saying, no, the Falcons are staying at 8, but they still want our pick at 10. So that would have obviously included multiple picks starting in round 2, and then obviously a future first-round pick as well, at the very least. But for whatever reason, the Jets and the Falcons couldn't connect on that. But I don't know who the Falcons wanted at 10, but that would have been probably equally surprising if they took Penix and then 15 minutes later we found out that they traded with the Jets to get the number 10 pick as well.
Oh, for sure, because they could have probably got Penix at 10. Then they could have taken
Should have done. And I mean, logically, that's what made the most sense, because you knew obviously the Bears at 9 weren't going to take a quarterback because they had Caleb. The only thing that might have frightened the Falcons was if the Vikings or the Broncos swapped with the Bears at 9 and to draft Michael Penix. But I think, in hindsight, I thought it was kind of foolish, because they really could have swapped with the Jets, because the Jets really wanted Rome Odunze. They could have gotten him at 10, at 8, sorry. And then the Falcons really wanted Penix, obviously, and they could have gotten him at 10.
For sure. You bring up Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel, and I wanted to I'll go to you, Hogan, first on this. Are you surprised that Ayuk, Samuel, T. Higgins, there was no movement on these guys at the draft? Did that surprise you, Hogan?
A little bit, especially considering it was a couple of years ago that you saw major players get dealt in the first round, which was a first time seeing that for me. Watching the NFL as long as I have, where I think you saw like AJ Brown get traded for a first round pick. I think Hollywood Brown got moved at 1.2, right? So I was definitely surprised, but a lot of these guys that are disgruntled don't want to be on the teams that they're on anymore, that there was no movement with them. But again, I think it shows for me personally, and Manish, I'd be great to hear your opinion on this, but like, I think it shows the GMs where they're at with the teams that they're trying to build at this point, where they don't want to let that talent go regardless of the disgruntled players, because they know what they have. And I think there's too many question marks going forward with either new players or guys that aren't in the system already that could fit in there. Because like I said, you look at, Ayuk and you look at Samuel, they're phenomenal where they're at right now. What are they going to have the same success if they go to another team with an unproven quarterback? It's a giant question mark. But San Francisco knows what they have right now. Cincinnati knows what they have right now with T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase, with Burrow throwing the ball to them. As much as I'm clamoring for Drake May to have those bona fide star receivers, it might not be a great fit. I mean, look how many times, to go back to the Brady era, we brought in those veteran guys and they just didn't pan out. You look at your Joey Galloway's, your Reggie Wayne's, your Brandon Ochocinco, Thomas from Denver. Like, all those guys were the biggest receivers on the planet at one point in their career, and then it could not translate to a Patriots system. But speaking of the Patriots, because that's who we're fans of, Manish, I want to get your thoughts on Drake May coming to New England the way he did. That third pick overall, it was, I think we all expected it at that the point when it got to when Washington took Jaden Daniels, because I was on record as saying, you know, whatever Washington did was going to set off the rest of the draft to be like, okay, if they take May, what's going to happen from here on out? But now we got Drake May in New England. What are you thinking about that?
I mean, I think he's in a good position in that there's no immediate pressure. Now, there's always pressure being the New England Patriots quarterback because of the specter of Tom Brady, even though we're a few years removed from him. I think that there's no pressure to start him right away. Jacoby Brissett is an excellent team guy, and that's not just lip service. I mean, he's a selfless guy. I think he's going to be able to impart a lot of wisdom on Drake May. I would be surprised that if Jacoby Brissett wasn't the week one starter, I would anticipate some kind of handing of the torch at some point during the season, unless, of course, Drake May is just lights out in the summertime and captures all the concepts that McAdoo and Van Pelt want and just looks like he's hitting the ground running, which I wouldn't anticipate, frankly. I mean, there's going to be a learning curve. So I think the safer move would be to start Jacoby Brissett. And then at some point, you'll make that change, whether that's based on how Brissett is playing or based on how the Patriots are doing from a record standpoint. I know New England fans don't want to hear it, or maybe, you know, they've resigned themselves to this fact, but it is a rebuilding season. You've got a new head coach. You in effect have a new general manager and a new quarterback. You don't want to rush the quarterback in. And this is from somebody who has seen teams rush quarterbacks in and not give them the proper support. And even if it's only a couple months, even if it means sitting the first half of the season, I think that's beneficial, frankly, for Drake May's long-term prospects as a quarterback. Again, unless, of course, his mental acumen is so sharp where he's making every read, he understands everything that's being thrown at him in the playbook. But that, of course, is a different story. But there's a lot of benefit for a rookie quarterback to learn. And even, again, it doesn't have to be the full season. It can be part of the season. And Jacoby Brissett is a quality enough player where it's not like the Patriots are going to be 0-8. I would be surprised. You know, he's a good player. He's a solid player who has shown to be a solid player as a starter, in spurts and small windows. So I think that the smart move, even if it's the conservative move, would be for Drake May to learn from his coaches, to learn the system, to learn from Jacoby Brissett. But from a physical standpoint, he's got a cannon arm, right? And I don't think he's a dummy. So I do think he's going to be able to pick up the playbook. At what rate, what pace, that remains to be seen. But I like the pick. I don't like the pick because I'm a college football guru who can tell you everything about Drake May. I just think conceptually, and I think I touched on this maybe a couple months ago with you guys, you could trade the picks. You trade the pick for a bunch of picks. I don't think that there'd be anything wrong with that. But if the general manager and the head coach had a strong conviction on a quarterback, then they needed to take that guy. And that guy, in their estimation, is Drake May. So you got to trust that what they believe is that this guy can be a franchise quarterback. And then obviously time will tell whether they're right or not. But I like the plan. I like the idea of really, taking a quarterback that you believe in. If you don't want to reach, and I think you saw that with the Giants, they tried to trade up for Drake May. They couldn't get it done with the Patriots. And then when J.J. McCarthy and Bo Nix were available for the Giants at 6, they said, you know what? We're not sold on these guys. We wanted Drake May. We aren't sold on McCarthy or Nix. So we'll go in a different direction. So clearly the Patriots liked what they saw on Drake May and their evaluations. And in my estimation, because of that, they made the right decision by taking him and not trading the picks.
Somebody else that the Patriots took on draft night that kind of surprised us a little bit. Or I'm sorry, not the night of. It was not till the sixth round. Joe Milton was another one that the Patriots snagged up there. What did you think about that one?
Well, didn't somebody ask Joe Milton if he would play a different position, and he said that's not going to happen? Or
tight end.
Look, you can draft two quarterbacks in 1 year. Just ask Washington when they took Cousins and RG3.
Yep.
Washington actually did that twice. They took Heath Shuler, and this might be before your time, but Heath Shuler and Gus Frerotte in the same draft. And Gus Frerotte was a later pick and actually played better than Heath Shuler. I'm not saying Milton's going to be better than Drake May. You know, for the Patriots fans' sake, hopefully that's not the case. I was surprised by Milton's reaction, though, when he said that he came in to play quarterback. I think if you're a late round pick, at any position, you should be open to saying, I'll do whatever I can to make the team. He's athletic.
Julian Edelman, anybody?
Right, exactly. College quarterback, right? College quarterback. And you know, he did whatever he needed to do to make the team, and he carved out, you know, a special career. So I was a little taken aback, quite frankly, when I heard that response. That's not typically a response you hear from a day three pick. But could he develop into a backup quarterback, perhaps, but is he athletic enough to play other positions offensively? Absolutely. So maybe sometime down the road, they do make that switch, but I don't think he's any kind of real threat to Drake May.
Me neither. And I was going, you know, in the months leading up to the draft, I was a Marvin Harrison Jr. guy for a very long time, where I wanted the weapon over the quarterback because I know what the hit rate is on the quarterbacks. But over the last probably 3 weeks leading up to the draft, I convinced myself into liking the Drake May pick because I knew it was probably going to happen, and I'm all in to see it. I agree with your sentiment, like, wholeheartedly, that I don't want him playing week one. Even if he really has a good summer, I really think it would be beneficial for him to sit, because this team, like you said, is going to be rebuilding this year. Almost seems like they're kind of writing off this year with the way they went through free agency, not spending their money. They are doing a lot to retain their talent. They just re-signed Christian Barmore to a monster deal, biggest deal for a Patriot player that was not Tom Brady in a long time. So that was good to see, but it does have that feel. So I do want him to sit behind and learn from Jacoby Brissett. And if he gets into the game late in the season, I think that would be outstanding. I mean, just to see, get him some action in the NFL, get him start to get comfortable with that pace of play. But I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens with Drake May and the Patriots. I'm very excited to, you know, it's been a long time. I don't think I can remember really a Patriots draft pick this high. I mean, Drew Bledsoe was taken in 1993? I was 4 years old when that happened. So, like, I don't even remember that. So it's exciting to see. I mean, most excited we've been for a draft in a long time since we've been picking at the end of the round the whole time. So we'll see where it goes. I want to move on to another AFC East team. And that's the New York Jets taking the tackle in the first round. I always have the hardest time pronouncing this guy's name.
It's Kamolu. Olufashinu.
Yeah, okay. I always have a hard time doing it. I don't know why. I can't read names very well. But I want to get your thoughts on his fit there with the Jets. I personally think it was a good fit because they have some aging tackles that they signed and acquired this offseason. We've touched on it with you in the past with Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses there in New York. What are your thoughts on that pick for the Jets? Do you think it's a good fit?
I like the pick conceptually. I mean, I like the idea of taking a tackle at that position. You know, there's a sentiment of the Jet fan base that wanted a weapon, and quite frankly, a weapon was the Jets' preference as well. That's why they tried to trade up for Rome Odunze to, you know, complement Garrett Wilson, help out Aaron Rodgers. But, you know, you just have to be realistic about this. Tyron Smith is 34 years old. He's missed more games than he's played cumulatively over the last four seasons. He really didn't practice during the week last year with the Cowboys. They had him on a special treatment plan so that he got his rest and could play. And he still missed four games, I think, last year, or maybe two games, something like that. But I think in that sense, even though it's technically an insurance policy, Fashion is really a left tackle. They may work him this summer to do a little right tackle. And frankly, they could use the right tackle help too, because Morgan Moses is 33. He's coming off pec surgery. So as you said, Berg. The tackles are old, aging guys, one coming off offseason surgery, one who's been habitually injured. So if you just, you know, look at what happened last season, the minute that Aaron Rodgers went down, they didn't have a smart succession plan from the quarterback position, but their offensive line also suffered injuries, like all offensive lines pretty much do every year. They didn't have any depth. So having a tackle, potentially being quality if Tyron Smith goes down right away was, I think, a smart decision. Now, was Fashanu the right guy? That I couldn't tell you. What I do know is that from a pass protection standpoint, the people that I've talked to said he's excellent when you have a defender, a pass rusher, right in front of him, so that right off the snap, you put your hands on the pass rusher, and he's got him locked up, and you're good to go if you're the quarterback. Sometimes when he gets in trouble is when guys are lined up wide. And frankly, looking at the J.J. Watts of the world, the Myles Garrett of the world, they're going to line up a few yards outside of him. And so when he's got to kick out against that type of player, and I'm not saying, the top two or three rushers in the NFL, but a quality NFL pass rusher who's lined up a little wider, he tends to get a little bit off balance, and that might cause some issues. But that's something that can be coached, of course. The biggest area that he needs to improve on is his run blocking, because frankly, it's below average, and that's something that is going to have to develop as time goes on. But I like the pick because in the short term, it's a good insurance policy. In the long term, it could pay off, and this guy could be a franchise left tackle for the next decade. So even though you might not have the immediate payoff week one in a quote unquote win now year, I just think it was a smart move to take that position when you're weighing the short-term benefit along with potential long-term benefit.
I'm not going to lie. I like the pick too, because being a former fatty myself, I love when offensive linemen go high. So all the kudos in the world, as much as I dislike the Jets being a Pats fan. One thing that I actually thought when we were watching the draft live was I thought that Brock Bowers might have actually been a pretty good fit with the Jets there, because especially where he was still on the board, and I know he eventually went to the Raiders, which, again, I think that was a good pick too. But I know the Jets, I think they still have Conklin on the team, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But I feel like Bowers would have been another great weapon for Rodgers to capitalize on there. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I thought it would be an interesting pick. I'm not a big take a tight end in the top 15 guy, because I've seen a lot of tight ends outside of Kyle Pitts, a lot of these young tight ends who have made a difference in their second round picks, or their late first round picks like Dalton Kincaid, they're not a top 10, top 11 type of pick. That being said, I think the Jets are happy because they ended up moving up in the first pick of the third round, I believe, to get this Western Kentucky wide receiver. Interesting player, Malachi Corley, I think is how you pronounce it. He actually, everyone on TV is comparing him to a Deebo Samuel type. I actually think he's like Ty Montgomery, which is, comparable in which, you look at Ty Montgomery's career, he was a wide receiver at Stanford, kind of morphed into a hybrid running back receiver. This is similar in the sense that you've got a guy who's about 5'11", 210, 215. He's kind of built like a running back. And if you look at his college highlights, I'm not going to say college tape because I didn't watch the All-22 for Western Kentucky, but I did his highlights on YouTube. Most of his receptions are right at the line of scrimmage. There's a lot of bubble screens. There's a lot of, quick hitters, quick slants, a couple yards from the line of scrimmage. And he did, I would say, significant portion of his damage after the catch. And that's why I think he dubs himself the Yak King. He doesn't really have any kind of, mature route tree. And I'm not saying he needs to be a Garrett Wilson type of route runner. Even the fundamental route tree, he doesn't really have. It's almost like he's an extension. It's an extension of the running game with him, which is like, Aaron Rodgers would snap the ball in this scenario, just throw it out to him, and he would break tackles, which, it worked at Western Kentucky. I don't know if it's going to work right away at the NFL, but if it can work, working with a guy like Aaron Rodgers would be extremely beneficial for him. And Aaron Rodgers had a lot of success with a converted quarterback, college quarterback, early in his college career, in Randall Cobb. And I'm not saying that this guy's going to end up being like Randall Cobb. He's not really built like him, but the concept is the same, which is like, I think there's a lot of polish that needs to happen with this Corley guy. But I do think that right away, he could actually make a pretty good impact, because Rodgers likes to get the ball out of his hands quickly. And if it is a lot of quick hitters and bubble screens, this is the type of player who can make guys miss and break tackles. So in that sense, I think that is a, you know, that is an early draft pick that the Jets had who could make a, you know, an important contribution, frankly, this year.
Yeah, I think those types of gadget players are a fantastic viewing when you're watching the game, like a guy like Deebo Samuel,
right,
being able to take carries out of the backfield. Cordarrelle Patterson's another one that kind of morphed into that kind of role too. I just think it's incredible to be able to watch that. I'd like to move on here. We've kind of hit on a couple of the teams, you know, that are right up our wheelhouse here. We are Patriots fans first and foremost, so we like to hear about the Jets because we don't like the Jets. But I want to get your take on who had the best draft on, you know, on last weekend. I think there are some teams that kind of did well, and then obviously you had guys like Atlanta that end up reaching for picks and kind of right. could domino effect down the draft. So I want to see what you have to say about that.
Well, you know what's going to happen. Like in 5 years, we're going to look back, and the Falcons would have they'll have drafted like three All Pros, and you know, Cousins will get hurt in September. Penix will come in, be Rookie of the Year, and we'll be like, what a great draft that the Falcons had. What I will say is, before I get to that, Berg, I just want to touch on something you said, how you talked yourself into the Drake May pick. That's, to me, one of the best things about the draft is that every fan base, you know, I've got a lot of friends who are, you know, I live in the Philadelphia area, so a lot of friends who are Eagles fans, and you can talk yourself into your team having a great draft, no matter who the team is. Like, you can justify, you know, there, you know, I have friends who are Jet fans, same thing, they're justifying all these picks, saying that it makes sense because A, B, and C. You know, it's an incomplete, we don't really know. In terms of teams that had good draft picks and then good overall drafts, frankly, I think that the teams that drafted in the middle of the first round who took defensive players like the Colts, Seattle, even Minnesota, got an edge pass rusher because all of these offensive players, these 14 picks that were all offensive players, that really pushed down the defensive players like pass rushers and cornerbacks, secondary players specifically. I mean, I loved what the Colts did in their first round, getting an edge pass rusher. Like I said, I mentioned the Vikings as well. Defensive tackle that Seattle got, I thought was really good. The Eagles got Quinyon Mitchell, I should say. The first cornerback taken off the board from Toledo. And then they ended up trading up in the second round, got Cooper DeJean, who's a safety corner. And that's to replace the worst pass defense in the NFL last year. So I thought the Eagles did well in the first 2 days. I thought it was a good day, frankly, for the Harbaugh brothers. You know, I thought Jim and the Chargers and Ortiz, their new general manager, you know, getting Joe Walt, you know, basically resisting the temptation to take Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze at five. I thought that was a smart pick. I think that Ladd McConkey, the Georgia wide receiver who they took early in the second round, is going to have just as much, if not a bigger impact than Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers in the first year of their careers. Because if you look at the Chargers, who is Justin Herbert throwing to? You got that big void with Keenan Allen gone. And I think McConkey can be a guy who can be a really like a target magnet and Justin Herbert's best friend, frankly, and right away. So to me, that guy can make a significant difference as a rookie. So I liked what the Chargers did. You know, the Ravens, John Harbaugh, it's never really sexy, but, you know, they replaced Morgan Moses with the Washington tackle, Rosengarten, who I thought was a great pick in round two. I mean, that to me is a guy who's going to be – he's going to be a starting offensive lineman at a high level probably for 10 years if he doesn't get hurt. I like what they did getting a cornerback with their first pick. Again, not really super sexy picks, but that was really solid as well. Obviously, I loved what the Bears did. I think it's hard not to like what the Bears did, getting the franchise quarterback, they hope, and getting Roma Dunze. Now you've got you really got Ryan Poles really set up Caleb Williams the right way. This is, you know, and it's kind of frustrates me at times when you look at what some of the teams over the last 5 years, 10 years have done with their rookie quarterbacks, not really helping them out with sufficient weaponry. But having Caleb Williams come into the NFL with Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, Roma Dunze, you still got Cole Kmet as a solid tight end. They signed DeAndre Swift, who's a, you know, professional running back, a quality running back. All the offensive pieces are there for Caleb Williams to succeed. And you know, I don't know if he's going to succeed or not. I think he's got the talent to succeed. But just the way that Ryan Poles and that front office set up their young quarterback, to me, that's textbook. You should really, those guys should write a book about how to kind of set up your quarterback. Ultimately, it's now up to the player and the coaches to succeed. But on paper, what they did was just, it was just tremendous. I thought it was terrific. And I'm excited. I'm not a Bears fan in the least bit, but I'm excited to see what that offense does, because there's so much, dynamic young talent there. And then you just inject a veteran guy like Keenan Allen into the equation. And I think that, Caleb Williams really is set up to do good things as a rookie.
That was my sentiment. That's what I was thinking too, was just the fact that the Bears kind of seemed to nailed everything leading up to this draft and what they were doing. Now it has to pan out. That's the biggest thing, is it has to pan out. Because I go back to that. Remember that Philadelphia team that they called the dream team with like Vic and
One second. Now I got to push back here. The dream team was a comment by Vince Young, who was the backup quarterback at the time.
I'm okay with that.
He said it in the press conference. It was like an offhanded remark, and everybody ran with it. And obviously it blew up in the Eagles' face. But I just want to point out that the guy who said it was Vince Young, who was the backup quarterback then.
Hey, do you not see the hat I'm wearing right now? I love me some Vince Young. Love Vince Young. No, I'm just saying in general, though, it is incredible to see, especially like being a Patriots fans, where for so long we saw Belichick either trade out of the first round, or it almost seemed like hoodwink other coaches or GMs into trading the next year's first round. I think it was like, there was like a 6 or 7 year stretch where the Patriots got another team's first round pick in the next year's draft. And it was just like, you just were waiting for it. And I used to tell people, like, when are other teams going to stop being stupid and giving the Patriots another first round pick the next year? Cause I think that's how we ended up getting our current head coach, Gerard Mayo, because he was the 10th overall pick the year after 2007, which was the 49ers pick.
I didn't know that.
That was because we forfeited the pick that we had in the first round of the next year because of the whole Spygate thing. But Mayo was the 10th overall pick, and that was from San Francisco. Like you were talking about earlier, hindsight is a wonderful thing sometimes when you look back and you see all pros where you weren't expecting them. But I want to get the opposite of what we talked about now, where put on your hat here, your crystal ball hat, and tell me who had the worst draft this year. I mean, obviously we got the surprises with like Atlanta. We think that they reach for Penix and whatnot. Is there anybody that stands out that really kind of went off the cusp in terms of they didn't really do what they should have or maybe expected or anything like that?
Well, I hate saying this because I think their draft was actually pretty good. And you're going to disagree with me on this, Hogan, because I think you mentioned it earlier that you liked the pick. I think if if you draft Michael Mayer in the second round last year, and I thought that Michael Mayer, Notre Dame tight end, was a really good pick, to be honest, in the second round. The Jets wanted him. I know that. And they went to trade up for him. But if you're drafting a tight end with that type of talent, you obviously didn't have the quarterback play as a rookie in the second round. And to come back with another tight end with a top 15 pick, I do think that Brock Bowers is going to be a good player. And I think that, Gardner Minshew, at least in the short term, can help him. I don't understand the concept, outside of the Gronk Aaron Hernandez era. I can't think of very many teams that had two high-end pass-catching tight ends. And obviously, these guys can block as well, but especially Mayer. But I didn't understand the philosophy there, because I know they wanted a quarterback. Tom Telesco wanted a quarterback. It just didn't happen, maybe because of whatever the compensation was. They couldn't trade up. Obviously, Penix, I don't think they anticipated going that high, but they were in the market for a quarterback, which made a lot of sense. The idea of getting Bowers, while I love Bowers as a player, I don't quite understand the fit. Now, that being said, I thought a lot of their remaining picks were good. So, is there one team that I thought had a terrible draft? Not really, because, again, there's going to be guys in the second, third round that either you gloss over because you don't know who they are or you're not particularly impressed by them, that end up being good players. So, I mean, will there be teams that had horrible drafts when we look back in a few years? Absolutely. But there isn't a team that kind of jumps out at me. I don't know. The Browns didn't really do much. I think, you know, what they did, you know, jumped out at me. But by and large, you know, I tend to look at the draft through a glass half full lens because I can understand and justify a lot, like 90% of the day one and early day two picks. Because even though teams say they don't draft, you know, based on need, the reality is that they do, you know, draft based on need, because otherwise you'd be, you know, doubling and tripling up on certain positions you don't need. So, yeah, nothing jumps out. The Browns, to me, didn't seem to have a great draft on paper. That's one thing, team that comes to mind. And there's isolated picks, like I said, with Bowers' pick with the Raiders, and, you know, we talked about Penix. But, yeah, no one team. I'm curious, are there any teams that you thought, wow, they really blew it?
Well, real quick, you're talking about the Raiders, where you're saying you're a glass half full guy. So I want to hear your justification when they took a kicker in the first round all those years ago. That you tell me right now what that glass half full looks like when you're taking a kicker.
Okay, look. As good as Seabass was, as Sebastian Janikowski was, and I mean, frankly, he should be a Hall of Famer. I don't know if that's going to happen. You never take a kicker. I mean, look, the Jets took the guy from Ohio State in the second round. Terry Bradshaw was the GM. He had a long career, too. And he just finished a couple years ago. I can't remember his name now. He was a kicker from Ohio State. They took him in the second round. I don't advocate that. Remember, the Buccaneers took that kicker from Florida State, who was a complete bust in the first or second round. Yeah.
I remember.
Yeah, him. I mean, look. Yeah, so you're putting me in an awkward spot. Obviously, taking a kicker that high is not recommended.
I had to call you out. You said you were a half-basketball guy, so.
Okay, the Patriots drafted a kicker and a punter last year, both, right?
That's true.
And that kicker, I had to look back at the stats. You guys would obviously know this, but I remember that kicker being shaky at times last year.
He was shaky the whole season.
Okay.
You're being generous calling him shaky.
Right. I'm not a big kicker guy, punter guy. The last time I was pumped about a punter, the Jets drafted Braden Mann in the sixth round. He had just won the college kicker of the year award, and they needed punter of the year, and they needed a punter. And his lasting legacy, Braden Mann, who's now in the Eagles, by the way, but his lasting legacy for the Jets is that he made a game-saving tackle late in the season a couple years ago against the Rams for the Jets to upset the Rams late that season. And that win cost him the number one pick, and it effectively cost him Trevor Lawrence. And they ended up with Zach Wilson. So when I think of Braden Mann, that's what I think of.
Well, Chad Ryland hit that dart in Denver, which ended up costing the Patriots the second overall pick this year. The one kick that he actually made.
Right. Speaking of that, and that's like, I know it's a fascinating conversation by itself, but the late game or late season wins by teams that are out of it. Because just look at the last game of the season. The Jets beat the Patriots in the snow, right? And I believe if they had lost that game, they would have had the fifth. I want to say it was the fifth or sixth overall pick. They could have had – if it was the fifth pick, they could have had Joe Walt, who they would have taken. If it was the sixth pick, they could have had Neighbors or Adunze. And I believe if the Patriots won that game, they would not have had the third pick.
They would not.
Right, so they wouldn't have Drake May. So it's fascinating to look at the last week or two, these meaningless – these quote-unquote meaningless games to everyone except the players and the coaches who want to win, they really do change and alter, you know, the course of a franchise.
I will never root for my team to lose a game during an NFL season. I don't care about the draft.
I disagree with that.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's what
Thank
I'm trying
you.
To say. You didn't care about it in January, but 3 months later, aren't you glad that they lost to the Jets?
Yes.
Sure, I am. Yes. But I would have rather kept the streak going. I would have rather kept the streak going.
Right, but the streak was going to end anyway because Belichick wasn't coming back. So
fair, but still, I will never root for my team to lose. I can't get up on a Sunday. I can't not get up for a football game on a Sunday. I can't.
Right. Okay. See, I can get up for if my team is out of it and they've been out of it for months. I mean, I don't even know if I'm watching the last game, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know. I grew up a Phillies fan. They sucked forever. I grew up an Eagles fan, and, you know, they finally won their first Super Bowl in franchise history. a few years ago. The Sixers losing the second round. They're probably going to lose in the first round this year. So I'm used to the losing. So once it gets to the end of a season, I naturally pivot toward the upcoming draft and who they can get. Because at the end of the day, if let's just say, Berg, let's just say the Patriots won that day, you would have been happy. But then like 2 days later, like would that win wouldn't have mattered,
probably,
right?
Probably not. But I'm also still coming off the 20-year run here. So I'm sure
once we realize
what it's like to be a real NFL fan.
So that's another thing. You guys have won so many freaking Super Bowls. Who cares about winning a meaningless game in a season you didn't make the playoffs? You.
I want to see my team win. That's what it comes down to.
Manish, this is why you and I are going to be best friends now, because I'm done. This is what I deal with, this clown over
right.
here.
No, look, I appreciate the loyalty. Like, I honestly really do appreciate the loyalty and more power to you. But, like, at some point, I just transition to bigger picture when my team's season is lost, when I know it's over that year. Like, I wouldn't actively root if I were you. I'm not saying to actively root against the Patriots. I'm not saying that. It's more about just being apathetic. And if they lose, I'm like, all right, you know what? It helped out our draft pick.
That's how I feel. When they lose, I'm like, okay, I'm not like back in the day when they would lose, I would need the night to like decompress. I'd be so upset about the Patriots losing when Tom Brady was here. But now, right. like they lost the game, I'm like, okay, season's done. They were stunk anyways. We're gonna have the third overall pick. Let's move on. Like that was kind of the feeling this year.
Let's be honest here. Like you were really upset when they lost these games with Tom Brady. They lost like 3 or 4 games a season. Like it's once a month. I mean, how about the average NFL fan that like endures like 2.5 months of
exactly.
pain?
I'm not used to it. I remember it. I was a kid.
Okay,
they
all
were
right,
really
I got
bad.
You. All so right. What are you like, see? Are you a Red Sox fan?
Yes.
So you were like a baby like during that whole drought, right? Before they ended up, you know, becoming good and breaking the 86-year-old drought.
I was 16 when they won.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So for the first half for a good 10 years you endured like a lot of pain.
I mean, I was again I was casual at that point. I got into it really big, like the 2003 year. So I was devastated when Aaron Boone hit that home run as a 15-year-old.
All right.
Then they won it the next year, and we all know what happened after that. And then we're all spoiled from that there on out. You know what I mean?
Right.
Spoiled.
No, I get it.
All sports.
And you guys have had a lot. You've had a good run up there. I mean, don't get me wrong. The Celtics are complete chokers. But, like, you guys, for the most part, have had a really good run over the last, like, 15, 20 years.
You can probably tell by my hat I'm not a big basketball fan. I'm all about the hockey.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Yeah, Bruins. I got you. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
No, it's true. So like we were saying though, is like the whole winning thing, it comes to an end. And I real quick, I just want to kick it back because you were asking if there was anybody that I felt maybe missed out on the draft or whatever. And going to a kind of a more recent losing franchise, I look at Washington. You know, even though they took Jaden Daniels there at the number 2 pick, which seems like it was the smart idea, I kind of got the consensus that maybe he wasn't too thrilled with that franchise, especially with all the shenanigans they kind of pulled leading up to the draft there. Did you hear the report with all like the bringing in the 4 guys at the same time? And then Daniels was kind of noncommittal where he's just like, I'm going to go and play wherever, whoever takes me. It is what it is. Like he didn't seem thrilled. Do you got anything on that?
Yeah, I think that Josh Harris, who owns the Commanders, he actually also owns the Sixers. I think that they brought the quarterbacks in to accommodate Josh Harris's schedule. For whatever reason, he was only available for that one day. So he wanted to meet all of the quarterback prospects. You know, I don't know what Josh Harris's schedule is like, but everything was tailored around what the owner, you know, with the owner being there, he wanted to be there. So I do commend Josh Harris for wanting to be there. I just think, you know, it's a disservice to all those guys to bring them in all at the same time. And what I will say about that is that, yeah, I mean, maybe there's some hurt feelings, but the minute that you get drafted by a team, you go all in, you meet your teammates. You know, it is a new regime. There's new ownership. There's the, you know, new GM, Adam Peters coming from the Niners. So he knows how to win. You know, obviously a new head coach as well. So, I'm not saying they're going to turn it around immediately, but it is a clean slate, a fresh start for him. It's not as if he's got to live up to any kind of, you know, recent past glory or recent past great quarterback play. So I think there's a great opportunity for Jaden Daniels in terms of how the rest of their draft goes, just like everybody else, you know, time will tell, but they've had an interesting offseason. They brought in a lot of guys, older guys, yeah. You know, it's a transition time for them as well. So I don't think, you know, I think that Jaden Daniels will play from the jump, unlike Drake May, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of pressure on him to, you know, to deliver, certainly as a rookie. I can't anticipate that. And the only guy that I can see, you know, making that C.J. Stroud type of leap, you know, from college to the pros right away is Caleb Williams for, you know, all the other reasons that I outlined.
Yeah, so for me on this, I'm one of those people that will react to the draft without even seeing a bunch of these players. Like, oh, they took Jalen Polk. Oh, man, that's such a great pick. I've never watched one game of Jalen Polk playing.
Right, right.
I never even watched the national championship. I didn't
know. Okay.
So I'm like, I'll be like, let's go. And then I'll be like, I'll look back. And then I actually have to do research before I actually figure out if I like the pick. And I feel like that's what majority of NFL fans are like. So when you see all the discourse on Twitter about, oh, they took the wrong guy. They should have taken Adonis Mitchell from Texas and this and that. I'm like, to me, they're the same guy. Like, I don't watch a lot of college football. I don't have the time with my three kids and everything to sit down and watch a ton of it. So, but I feel like that's the majority of NFL fans takes on this stuff, and you see all the discourse, and it's like, I can't even look into it. I'm not even going to do it because we're going to see what happens come July and September this year when it comes to these guys.
Yeah, that's a rational way of looking at it. You're a rational fan. I think the most fans, their knowledge base for 90% of these players is YouTube, essentially, right? I mean, they're not watching college football. I mean, there are some college football diehard fans who can give you a little bit of insight on certain players, but especially when you talk about guys, you know, I mean, you talk about Polk, who's obviously from a great team and a great program, who had a billion guys drafted early. But, you know, if you talk about guys from smaller schools, the odds are that, you know, you haven't watched them. So a lot of times it's like the blind leading the blind. And then there's like an echo chamber on social media and things kind of take off where this was a great pick or this was a blown pick. You know, Polk could be great. You know, you, the other receiver, the Patriots got, Baker. I mean, obviously he was highly thought of coming out of high school. He was in Alabama before transferring. So, you know, maybe he can be a productive guy. I mean, I've heard a lot of good things about Wallace. I can't tell you that I watched Wallace play in college. I'm not watching, you know, tackles. I'm not watching the other guy, the interior guy, the guard that they drafted in the fourth round. But conceptually, what Elliott Wolf and Gerard Mayo did, I think, made a lot of sense. You got two offensive linemen, you got a quarterback, you got two receivers. Hopefully these guys develop into what, you know, the decision makers believe they can develop into. The initial reaction typically sways toward guys who are on TV a lot, the big name schools, because you watch these guys on TV, you're familiar with their name, there's, you know, name recognition, whereas some of the guys from other schools, you know, you're not watching it unless you're like a college football diehard. So, you know, I always say, give it at least 2 years. You know, nobody wants to hear that. That's why there's a million websites that give out grades. You know, obviously every team's grade is incomplete. I mean, that's the accurate grade, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, you want to have discussion on podcasts, on sports talk radio, on television. It's a fun conversation. But ultimately, I don't take much stock in it because I know that most of the people in these discussions, including myself, are not experts. You know, the guys who spend their entire year centered on evaluating these guys, guys like you know, Mel Kiper, frankly. You know, Mel Kiper is wrong a lot as well, but he literally does this year round. I mean, this is what he does for a living. And is he going to be right all the time? Of course he's not. He's going to be wrong. He's probably going to be wrong a decent amount, but it's a fraction compared to how wrong I would be or how wrong fans would be because we're not watching these players. So they give you, you know, they give you good insight. I actually thought, you know, Mike Mayock, you know, before he became the GM of the Raiders and things didn't work out there, I thought he was terrific. I mean, he did a lot of work on that. But even those guys, you got to give these players a little time to breathe and develop. And, you know, they might not turn out to be great players in year one. They might not turn out to be great players in year two. But at some point in that third year, I think you'll find out, you'll have a good handle. If the guy doesn't, you know, start off on fire, because if he starts off on fire, he's probably going to be good his whole career. But just because you don't start off hot doesn't mean you're not going to have a great career. So if it takes a year or if it takes 2 years, you know, I look at the Eagles, a guy who just retired, Brandon Graham, first round pick, you know, kind of a disappointment the first few years. And then he ended up being, you know, a 10-year vet for the Eagles, Super Bowl winning champion, a guy who, you know, I'm sorry to, you know, bring this up, but, you know, a guy who stripped Tom Brady to help the Eagles beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl in the last couple minutes. But I mean, that happens. What I'm trying to say is, like, you know, give it a little bit of time And, you know, the cream will rise to the top. Maybe they're not all going to be all pros or pro bowlers, but you can get a lot of good players. And in this draft for the Patriots, what, 7 out of the 8 picks were offensive players. If you can get 4 to 5 contributors, that's a grand slam. You get 5 contributors, that's a grand slam. You get 4 contributors, it's a home run. You get 3 really top end players, it's a win. And that's not going to, you know, really manifest itself until I think at least a year or two goes by.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny because you were talking about being wrong all the time. And it's like, there's 2 jobs that I wish I could have. It's either being a NFL draft analyst or being a weatherman, because, you know, those guys get it wrong all the time and they still get to keep their job. So if I'm wrong at my job, I'm unemployed tomorrow. That's the unfortunate part of it. But
yeah, it's a great gig. I don't remember Daniel Jeremiah's big board from 3 years ago. I mean, he could have been dead on, or he could have been dead wrong.
That's it. That's exactly it. Well, before we let you go, Manish, one last thing that we want to run by you, because I saw this, it kind of piqued my interest, where especially whenever the free agency starts, you see guys go to different teams that immediately could make impacts or what have you. And then when the draft happens, that kind of solidifies what that team's going to look like going into the next season, because there's not much hoopla going into preseason except for guys getting cut or what have you. Did any team really jump ahead on your board? Obviously, I know you like Chicago with what they've done to obviously increase their win percentage going forward with Caleb Williams and Adunze and all that. But like, I saw that after the Chiefs took Xavier Worthy, which I love the guy. I wish he didn't go there because I can't stand the Chiefs personally. They immediately became Super Bowl favorites again when they weren't the favorites going into the draft. So was there anybody, just from your perspective, maybe not Super Bowl champion favorites, but was there anybody that you like that really set themselves apart to maybe become a playoff team, a 10-win team, where before they were middle of the pack or below that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I mentioned them earlier, I think the Chargers really put themselves into being a legit playoff team. Winning the division with Kansas City, probably not going to happen. But I think I may have mentioned this a couple months ago. I'm a huge, huge believer in Jim Harbaugh. I really, for all his quirks, you know, he's kind of a peculiar guy. But he understands how to build winning teams. You know, he's got an offensive lineman. In the first round, he got who I think could be an immediate impact receiver. In the second round, he got one of his guys from Michigan, a linebacker in the third round. He's got the franchise quarterback who, you know, people are just waiting to finally break through. He's proven that he can develop young, highly talented quarterbacks. They were a borderline type of team, even though record-wise they were awful last year. The talent was there. I really think that the influx of Jim Harbaugh adding who I think is going to be an incredible player, all-pro player in Joe Alt, and probably an underrated wide receiver in McConkey, along with the franchise quarterback, I think they're going to be in the mix for a playoff spot, whereas maybe they were one or two ticks short of that before the draft. But just adding those pieces, you knew that, you know, they needed offensive line help and wide receiver help. Adding those two pieces along with the coach, I just can't overstate how important it is to have a great coach. You know, I don't have to tell you guys that. You guys are fully aware of that. But I think that they really helped themselves out. I think, I hate saying this because, you know, deep down, I really would love the Eagles to be a Super Bowl team. I don't think they're a Super Bowl team, but I do think that they helped out Vic Fangio, who's their new defensive coordinator, by adding 2 really athletic pieces in the back end. The back end was a big problem for them. James Bradbury looks like he's cooked. So I think that, you know, Quinion Mitchell is going to slide into the offense, to the starting cornerback spot opposite Darius Slay. And I do think that Cooper DeJean can play safety. He can play slot corner. He can do a lot of different things to help in that Vic Fangio offense, defense. I think that, you know, they really helped themselves. Frankly, I think Seattle helped themselves a lot as well. Offensive line, defensive tackle. They were a borderline playoff team, you know, right there last year as well. So, you know, I think those are a couple of teams. I mean, they're a lot more, but I think that, you know, you're not going to move the needle a lot. The Xavier Worthy thing, I think, was more of a response of, well, they're going to miss Rashee Rice for part of the season, if not the entire season, you know, depending on what happens. Now they got a speedy guy What I will caution Chiefs fans is that just because Xavier Worthy is fast, I mean, he may be great. He's got a great coach and he's got a great quarterback, the best quarterback, and the best head coach in the league on his side. And that may work out. But the last time they drafted an extremely fast wide receiver, it was Mecole Hardman. Yeah, he won, helped them win the Super Bowl last year. But by and large, you know, his career has been underwhelming.
Absolutely. I do want to ask you, did you see Bill Belichick with Pat McAfee during the draft?
No, I saw clips of it, bits and pieces. I'd be curious to see what you guys saw. Just my quick footnote, thumbnail sketch of Bill Belichick is that Bill Belichick, I've said this for 20 years, it's harder for Bill Belichick to act the way he did in public than it would have been to just, you know, be who he actually is. Extremely smart, insightful football guy. You know, being, you know, just having this unnecessary angst with the media to me never made any sense. You knew he wasn't like that in real life. Nobody can be like that in real life. You know, it just takes more effort to be like that as opposed to, you don't have to have loose lips, but just show, you know, what he did on Fridays. You guys are fully aware of this. On Fridays, he kind of opened up a little bit about the game of football. A lot of guys asked him about football related questions and he could go on a rant about the long snapper. His football IQ is so ridiculously high. I think that's going to shine through now that he's a member of the media. I just wish he would have shown more of a side of that when he was actually the coach.
For sure. I thought he was fantastic, and I think he's going to succeed incredibly well. We got a couple of glimpses with it with the Army-Navy game when he was on College Game Day when the game was held at Gillette Stadium. But I think he's going to excel at that, and a lot of people were questioning that was going to be a fit. But you kind of hit the nail on the head. His IQ is so high, and the way that he can talk about the game is incredible, and he's such a historian. So, Hogan, I don't know if you have anything to add on that.
Yeah, well, I go back to, I believe it was NFL Network did their top 100 players, like, all time, and they had him host that, and that kind of got me down that path of being, like, the historian that I like to be, where I look up these old players and stuff, because you see Belichick gushing over, like, your Otto Grahams or, you know, like, Jack Lambert and, like, all those guys, like, way back in the day that, like, honestly, there might not be a lot of film on them, but to hear him speak of it like he was there watching it, and as old as Belichick is, you might be surprised that he saw some of these guys play, obviously. But it's like you said, Manish, it's great to see that side of him now that he's not, you know, sitting there going, we're on to Cincinnati, leave me alone. You know, like that's what we're used to. And it's like, okay, yeah, we get it. But yeah, it'll be great to see him pop out more personality wise. And it's great to hear him, like you said, talking about a freaking long snapper for a half an hour. Like, I think he's the only person on the planet that can make you admire long snappers after hearing him talk that long.
Yeah, look, he's brilliant. And what I will say also, this is a sound strategic move for him, because I know he wants to coach again. You know, there's rumors out there, whether it was in that documentary, whether it was, in things that have been written about how maybe he's out of touch, maybe the time, you know, the game has passed him by, which I've always thought was BS. But this is a way to kind of remake his image by showing everybody a little bit more of who he is. And frankly, you know, you can say what you want about Pat McAfee. He's got his critics, he's got his supporters, but he's got such a massive following, I think, with the younger generation. And I think this is a way for Bill Belichick to touch that generation and to show people, who he is, to make him, as weird as it sounds, because he's Bill Belichick and he's won so many Super Bowls and he's an all-time great, of course. But it's a way for him to kind of ingratiate himself with everybody again so that he is more of an appealing candidate a year from now. Because I think, you know, a year from now, he will be a head coach. And I think that this will help. I'm not saying this is why he's doing it. Maybe it plays a role in it. But this certainly will help him when it comes to relatability. Because, he's a wealth of knowledge. He has so much to offer in terms of analysis. You know, it's not BS analysis. It's coming, you know, from experience, and even like little stories about how he had the Randy Moss deal went down, him calling Randy and Randy hanging up. I don't know if you guys heard that. That was a nice little anecdote. He's full of anecdotes like that. He's got a lifetime of football anecdotes like that. And I think it's really going to hit home. It's really going to relate. I think he's going to be a home run for ESPN, for Pat McAfee, and for whoever else he goes on, because he's got a lot to offer. And again, I just wish he would have shown a little bit more of that as the head coach of the Patriots.
The real question is, Are you going to watch the roast of Tom Brady? Because I heard Belichick's going to be there. That's got to be must-see TV.
I can't wait.
Yeah, it's on Netflix, right? I watch it on like on demand or on DVR, but I have Netflix, so I do want to watch it. It's a fascinating idea. I guess it says a lot about Tom that, you know, he wants to do it because there's a lot of material there. Let's put it that way.
All I know is if it's just Nick Foles and Eli Manning standing up there for like an hour and a half, just being like, suck it, bitch. I'm going to be so upset. That's all I have to say.
I'm definitely going to watch it. Like, I think it's going to be highly entertaining. It would be great. I heard the same thing, Hogan. I heard that Bill's going to participate. So, yeah, that's going to be I think it's going to be highly entertaining and definitely worth the watch.
I think that speaks to their relationship too, that they're both going to be involved there. I think that speaks that there's no bridges burned between those two guys.
I don't know the inner dynamics of their relationship. Was there friction at points? Obviously, any relationship you have, whether it's with your parents, your siblings, your wife, your kids, you're going to have like moments of strife. Nobody gets along 100% of the time, 100% of the time, you know? So were there ups and downs? Of course. But like, look at it now. Brady's done playing. I think that Belichick's in a hiatus period, but he's no longer the Patriots head coach. It'd be ridiculous if they didn't, you know, realize what they did together, because what they did together, I don't think will ever be replicated.
Absolutely. Well, I think this is a good point to plug this episode up. Manish, it's always a pleasure to have you on with us. We look forward to doing it again in the future. Hogan, I don't want to call it a pleasure, but we're here.
But see, Manish, this is what I deal with on a daily basis. I got to deal with this. So you got to come save me more often, man. But
I'll do what I can. You guys are a lot of fun. Good luck on the new format. I hope it really kicks ass.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it. Well, you all have a good week. We'll catch you next time. Peace.